All right, so we've got a whole bunch of design pattern stuff here that you sent me.
Yeah.
And you seem to be like really diving deep into how like the best programmers out there are building this software that can be used again and again, and it's also really flexible.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like they have these like secret blueprints, for solving these common problems that we all run into when we code,
Right.
and ends up making their code super elegant and efficient.
Yeah, and reusable,
Yeah, exactly.
which is something that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Like the software world changes all the time, so how do you build something that can like adapt to that,
Right.
you know?
Totally. Yeah, and we have all these different sources here.
Yeah.
We've got like excerpts from a textbook on design patterns. We've got a sneak peek into the famous Gang of Four book,
Yes.
Design Patterns, Elements of Reusable Object-Oriented Software, the one that everybody always talks about.
Right.
And we've also got like some interesting notes that you've jotted down.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is break down what design patterns really are, how they solve these tricky design problems, and where we can see them in action.
Yeah.
So get ready for some serious aha moments here.
Okay.
And I think a good place to start is by clearing up something that a lot of people get confused about, which is the difference between design patterns and frameworks.
Yeah.
They sound kind of similar, but there's a really key distinction there.
There is,
So
yeah.
what is that distinction?
Well, remember those blueprints we talked about? Design patterns are like that. They're these abstract solutions to problems. They're almost like recipes or like guidelines for recurring problems that you'll run into when you're designing software. Frameworks, on the other hand, are more concrete, like those prefab houses. They're often made for specific types of applications, and you use them directly. You take their code and you incorporate it into your project.
Okay, so it's like a design pattern would be like a general strategy for something like getting rid of all the if statements in your code.
Yeah.
But a framework would be something more complete, like a pre-built structure for, say, building a website with tools and components already built
That's
in.
a great way to put it.
Yeah,
Yeah, think of the strategy pattern.
okay.
It's this really clever way to replace those big, cumbersome conditional statements
Yeah.
with a much more object-oriented approach, a much sleeker approach, whereas a framework would be something like React or Angular,
Right.
giving you that really solid foundation for building web apps.
Yeah.
But they come with their own opinions about how things should be done.
Okay, that's starting to make sense now.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this Gang of Four book.
Yeah.
Everyone always calls it the GOF book.
Yeah.
Why is this book so legendary in the world of design patterns?
It's like the Bible of design patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the first books to really lay out all of these recurring solutions in a clear, organized way. And it's had a huge impact on how programmers think about design.
Okay, and they categorize these patterns.
Right? Yeah.
Like how do they break it down?
So they set up three main categories: creational, structural, and behavioral. Creational patterns are all about making objects in a flexible and efficient way. It's almost like they're different assembly lines in a factory. Structural patterns are focused on how you piece those objects together to make bigger structures. And behavioral patterns are about how those objects interact and communicate.
So it's like you've got your toolbox and it's got these different compartments for different design needs.
Exactly.
Okay, pretty organized,
Yeah. And
but there are a ton of patterns.
there are.
How do you even like start to figure out which ones to use or how to navigate all of that?
Yeah, it can be a bit overwhelming.
Right.
The GoFelt book offers a couple of different paths.
Okay.
You can follow the relationships between patterns. It's sort of like a map that shows how they're connected.
Okay.
Or you can go for a more problem-solving approach. What specific design problem are you wrestling with?
Yeah.
And then you zero in on the patterns that are designed to tackle that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of problems, one quote from your notes really stood out to me.
Oh, yeah.
It's from the GoF book.
Okay.
Experienced object-oriented designers will tell you that a reusable and flexible design is difficult, if not impossible, to get right the first time.
It's true.
Why is it so hard to design reusable object-oriented software?
Well, the whole point of object-oriented programming is to create these modular, reusable pieces, these objects. But, you know, finding the perfect objects, defining how they're related, and making them work together seamlessly,
Yeah.
that's a real art.
It is.
It's this constant balancing act between creating a design that solves your current problem, but also can be adapted and reused down the line. And the GoF book gets that. it breaks down each design pattern into these problem and solution sections.
Okay.
You're not just handed code.
Right.
You're given a framework for thinking through the problem.
Yeah.
So it walks you through the context and then presents the pattern as a general solution.
Oh, okay. I like that. So it's not about like nailing it on the first try. It's more about learning and refining as you use your code again and again.
Exactly. It's all about continuous improvement,
Okay.
much like software development itself.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, let's dig into some specific design challenges now
Yeah, let's get into it.
and see how these patterns can help us find solutions.
Here's where it gets interesting. So one challenge that you've highlighted in your notes is finding appropriate objects. That seems pretty fundamental.
It
Why
is.
is that so tricky?
You might think that object-oriented design is just about translating real-world stuff into code,
Yeah.
but it's not always that straightforward.
Yep.
Sometimes the best designs introduce these abstract concepts that don't have a perfect real-world equivalent.
So you're not just mirroring reality, you're kind of crafting this model that works within the software world.
Precisely.
Okay.
Take the composite pattern, for example.
Okay.
It lets you handle individual objects and groups of objects in the same way, even if they're very different in the real world. So it's like creating a family tree where you can treat each member the same way, whether they're a parent with children or an individual.
That's a good example. What about specifying object interfaces? Those are like the rules of engagement for how objects interact, right?
Exactly. Design patterns help you to define those interfaces by pinpointing the key data and how it flows between objects.
Okay.
So they give you a structured way to think about what information needs to be shared and how.
So it's not just about writing the code, it's about setting up these clear communication pathways between objects.
Think about the memento pattern. It outlines a really specific way to handle an object's internal state without revealing how it's built. So imagine being able to save and restore an object's state without anyone knowing how it's actually built.
Okay.
That's what Memento lets you do.
That would be really useful for things like undo features or like saving and loading data. Okay, now let's get into determining object implementations. This seems to get into how programming languages handle inheritance.
So inheritance is essentially the family tree of objects.
Okay.
One object inherits characteristics from another. But there's a crucial difference between interface inheritance and implementation inheritance.
Okay, so what's the difference?
Well, interface inheritance focuses on what an object can do,
Okay.
so it's methods, whereas implementation inheritance is about how it actually does it.
Okay.
Design patterns really emphasize focusing on interfaces rather than implementations.
Because you want to be able to like change the underlying code without breaking everything, right?
Exactly. Like, take the chain of responsibility pattern.
Okay.
It requires objects to share a common type, so they have the same interface, but they can have all sorts of different implementations.
Okay.
Imagine a customer support system.
Okay.
You might have different people handling a request in different ways, but they all follow the same basic steps.
So it's like a standard operating procedure, but different people kind of bringing their own expertise to the table.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
Now that leads us to another big idea, which is object composition versus class inheritance.
Okay.
These are two main ways to achieve reusability, but they take different approaches.
Okay, so we've got inheritance, which is the family tree approach, and then we've got composition. So what's composition?
Composition is about building objects by combining other objects
Okay.
rather than inheriting from them.
Okay.
So it's like building a house out of prefabricated components instead of trying to build everything from scratch. Both approaches have their advantages and disadvantages.
Okay, so which one is better?
Well, there's no simple answer.
Okay.
Inheritance is often simpler when you have a really clear object hierarchy, but it can create this tight coupling where changes in one class can ripple through the whole system.
Right.
Composition, on the other hand, is like building with Legos. You can swap out components easily.
Yeah.
It offers looser coupling, but it can be more complex to set up initially.
So it sounds like composition is more flexible, but maybe has a steeper learning curve.
Often, yeah.
Okay.
Now let's talk about designing for change.
Yep.
How do design patterns help us to build systems that can adapt and evolve over time?
Well, because the only guarantee in software is that things will change, right? Like requirements change, technologies evolve, users want new features.
It's true. The GOF book does a great job of highlighting some common reasons why software needs to be redesigned
Okay.
and how specific patterns address those challenges.
Okay.
It's almost like having these preemptive solutions for potential problems.
So you're not just reacting to change, you're kind of anticipating it and building that flexibility in from the start.
Right. For example, creating objects by specifically naming a class can create really tight coupling, which limits your flexibility.
Right.
But patterns like abstract factory and factory method offer a way to create objects indirectly through an interface.
Okay.
And this makes it much easier to swap out implementations later.
So it's like having a factory that can produce different types of objects based on what you need.
Yeah.
Without you needing to know all the nitty-gritty details.
That's a great analogy.
Okay.
Another common pitfall is relying too heavily on specific operations.
Okay.
So if your code is built around particular methods or algorithms, even small changes can snowball into bigger problems.
Making it kind of fragile, like a house of cards.
Exactly.
But patterns like strategy and template method offer solutions, right?
They do. Strategy lets you encapsulate algorithms into separate objects.
Okay.
Making them easy to swap out or modify. Template method defines a basic structure in a parent class, but lets subclasses tweak specific steps.
Okay.
So you get that customization without changing the whole structure.
It's like having a recipe and you can kind of swap out ingredients or adjust cooking times without having to rewrite the whole thing.
I like that.
Okay.
Then we've got tight coupling, which we've touched on.
Mm-hmm.
This can turn your code into this big tangled mess that's hard to reuse or maintain.
Like trying to untangle a giant ball of yarn.
Exactly. And Abstract Factory Bridge and Observer are some patterns that can help to loosen those dependencies and create a more modular, reusable code.
So tell me a little bit more about each of those.
Okay, so Abstract Factory gives you a way to create families of related objects without specifying their exact classes.
Mm-hmm.
Bridge separates an object's concept from how it's implemented so they can change independently.
Okay.
And Observer sets up a system where when one object changes state, all of its dependents are automatically notified and updated.
So it sounds like these patterns are all about breaking down complex systems into these smaller, more manageable pieces that can kind of evolve independently.
That's the essence of it.
Okay.
Lastly, there's the challenge of extending functionality by subclassing.
Mm-hmm.
While inheritance is powerful, overusing it can lead to an explosion of subclasses.
Okay.
Which makes your code really hard to grasp and maintain.
Yeah, because each subclass adds more complexity and like more potential points of failure.
Exactly. But patterns like Decorator Strategy and Visitor provide alternative ways to extend functionality without relying solely on subclassing.
Okay.
So Decorator lets you dynamically add responsibilities to objects, like adding toppings to a pizza. Strategy, as we talked about, encapsulates algorithms into separate objects. And Visitor defines operations on objects without modifying the objects themselves.
So it sounds like these patterns help you avoid creating those massive tangled family trees of classes.
They're all about creating elegant, adaptable designs. Now, before we jump into specific patterns, let's clarify the difference between toolkits and frameworks.
Okay.
These terms often come up when we're talking about reusability.
Right, because they both offer ways to reuse code.
They do, but they serve different purposes.
Okay.
Toolkits are collections of reusable classes, like libraries of pre-built components that you can use in your projects.
Right.
Frameworks, on the other hand, provide a more complete structure.
Mm-hmm.
They have opinions about how your application should be organized.
Okay.
And they often dictate the flow of control.
So a toolkit is like a box of tools you can pick and choose what you need for a specific task.
Yeah.
But a framework is more like a pre-built house. It's already got walls and a roof and plumbing.
Exactly.
But you might need to adapt it to your specific needs.
That's a perfect analogy.
Okay.
Frameworks give you more structure and guidance.
Yeah.
But they can also be more restrictive.
Okay.
Toolkits are more flexible, but they require more effort to integrate.
So it's a trade-off between structure and flexibility.
Exactly. Now let's circle back to the GoFat catalog.
Okay.
And talk about how to use it effectively.
Mm.
Remember, it's a toolbox full of solutions, but you need to know which tools to use.
Right.
So any tips on how to navigate this massive collection of patterns? The GoF book has several helpful strategies.
Okay.
One is to scan the intent sections.
Yep.
Each pattern has a quick description of its purpose, which can help you quickly identify patterns that are relevant to your problem.
So it's like reading the labels on the tools in your toolbox to see what they're designed for.
Exactly.
Okay.
Another approach is to study how the patterns relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
The GoF book includes these diagrams showing those relationships.
So you can see how different patterns fit together to solve more complex problems.
Precisely. And you can also study patterns that share a similar purpose.
Okay.
For example, there are several creational patterns,
Mm.
each with its own strengths and weaknesses.
Right.
Comparing them can help you to understand their nuances and choose the best one for your specific needs.
It's like having a team of expert consultants helping you to choose the right tool for the job.
I like that.
Now, to see these patterns in action, the GORF book uses this example of a text editor called Lexi.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at Lexi.
Okay.
What were some of the design challenges that Lexi's developers faced?
Lexi's developers faced several design challenges, like supporting multiple look and feel standards, different window systems, and a whole bunch of user operations. So they needed a design that could handle all of that without becoming overly complex or difficult to maintain.
That sounds like a recipe for a design nightmare.
It could have been,
Yeah.
but they used design patterns to create a flexible and adaptable architecture.
Okay, so which patterns did they use?
They used a mix of patterns, including compositor, abstract factory, iterator, and more,
Okay.
each one tackling a specific part of the design.
I'm excited to hear more about those.
We'll explore them in more detail as we dive deeper.
Okay, sounds good.
Now, to really grasp the power of design patterns.
Let's zoom in on a few specific patterns.
Okay, where should we start?
Let's begin with abstract factory.
Okay.
It's a foundational pattern for creating families of related objects.
Okay, let's unpack abstract factory then. What's
Yeah.
its main purpose?
So abstract factory provides an interface for creating families of related objects
Okay.
without specifying the exact class of the object that will be created. It's like having a factory that can produce different types of products.
Okay.
But you don't need to know the specific details of how each product is made.
Okay, so it's about abstracting away the creation process.
Exactly.
So why is that so important?
Well, it gives you the freedom to create objects without being tied to their specific implementations.
Okay.
And this is important for a few reasons. Like, you might want to support different look and feel standards, like Lexi does.
Right.
By using Abstract Factory, you can easily switch between different families of widgets
Okay.
without changing the core code that uses them. So it's like a furniture factory that can make either modern or antique furniture
Yeah.
based on the customer's preference.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now let's check out another essential pattern, which is strategy. We
Okay.
touched on it briefly before.
Uh-huh.
It's all about encapsulating algorithms and getting rid of those messy conditional statements.
Okay. Time to strategize about strategy.
Okay.
So what's the core concept behind it?
With strategy, you define a family of algorithms,
Okay.
encapsulate each one, and make them interchangeable.
Okay.
This means that you can swap out the algorithm an object uses on the fly without modifying the object itself.
So it's like having a toolbox of algorithms that you can pick and choose from.
Precisely, a great example from your sources is how Lexi handles line breaking.
Done.
Instead of hard coding different line breaking algorithms, Lexi uses strategy to package each one into a separate object. And this makes it easy to add new algorithms or switch between existing ones without touching the core code.
Okay, so that sounds way cleaner and more flexible.
It is. Let's move on to composite now.
Okay.
It tackles the challenge of building these tree-like structures of objects and treating them as one unit.
Okay, let's branch out into composite then.
Okay.
How does it help us build these hierarchical structures?
So composite allows you to build objects into tree structures representing part-whole hierarchies.
Okay.
And it lets you treat individual objects and groups of objects the same way.
So it's like that family tree example again, where each person can be either an individual or a parent with their own kids.
Right on. For example, imagine a graphical editor like the one in your notes.
Okay.
You might have different types of graphical objects like lines, rectangles, and text. Composite lets you treat all of those objects the same,
Okay.
whether they're simple shapes or complex groups.
So you can like move or resize a group of objects just as easily as you can a single object.
Exactly. And last but not least, let's explore Observer.
Okay.
This pattern is all about setting up dependencies between objects so they can notify each other about events.
Okay, time to observe. Observer in action.
Yeah. So, what's its main function?
Observer defines a one-to-many dependency between objects
Okay.
so that when one object changes state, all of its dependents are automatically notified and updated.
Okay.
It's a powerful way to build responsive systems where things are loosely coupled.
So, it's like a news channel sending out breaking news alerts to its subscribers.
Exactly. Think about a spreadsheet application.
Okay.
When you change a value in one cell, all the cells that depend on that cell automatically update.
Right.
That's Observer at work.
That makes perfect sense. It keeps the system consistent and responsive without those objects constantly having to check for changes.
Exactly. That was just a quick glimpse into those four patterns.
Yeah.
And there are many more waiting to be explored.
This deep dive has already been incredibly insightful.
Good.
I'm starting to see how these patterns can help me write code that's cleaner, more flexible, and more reusable.
That's what they're all about.
Okay, cool.
They provide a powerful toolkit for tackling those recurring design challenges.
And building elegant and maintainable software.
Yeah.
But remember, they're not a magic solution.
Right.
Choosing the right pattern for the job and applying it correctly takes careful thought and understanding.
Right. It's not about memorizing the patterns. It's about understanding the principles behind them.
Exactly.
And applying them intelligently.
Yes. As we continue our deep dive into the GoFoot book and your other sources,
mm-hmm.
we'll explore more patterns,
yeah.
dig into their nuances,
yes.
and see how they can be combined to solve even more complex design problems.
That's good. I'm excited.
So picking up where we left off, let's see how some of these patterns actually play out in real-world scenarios.
Okay.
Remember that Lexi text editor example from the GoFoot book?
Yeah, Lexi.
It's a perfect illustration of how these patterns can solve those tricky design problems.
Yeah, it had to deal with all those different look and feel standards and all the different window systems.
Yeah.
It's like a design puzzle.
It is.
So how did design patterns help them create a system that's both, like, cohesive but also flexible?
Well, Lexi's developers faced some classic design problems,
mm-hmm.
and they turned to a mix of patterns for elegant solutions.
Okay.
One big challenge was supporting multiple look and feel standards,
right.
without having to rewrite tons of code every time a new standard came along.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So imagine having to like redesign your entire house
uh-huh.
every time a new furniture style became popular.
Yeah, that would be a nightmare.
It would be a maintenance nightmare.
Yeah.
So did they find a way to like easily switch between those standards?
Yeah, how did they do that?
Abstract Factory.
Okay.
That was their key.
Okay, so how did that work?
It let them create these families of related objects,
okay.
things like buttons, scroll bars, windows,
mm-hmm.
without having to actually specify their concrete classes.
Okay.
So they could swap out an entire set of widgets just by changing the abstract factory they were using.
So they could have like a motif factory for the motif widgets.
Yeah.
And a presentation manager factory.
Yeah.
For the presentation manager widgets and just switch between them.
Yep, just like that.
It's pretty slick.
It is. It's like having those different assembly lines in a factory,
right.
each one producing a different style of product.
I like that analogy.
Another challenge Lexi faced was figuring out how to represent the structure of a document
okay.
in a flexible and efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the composite pattern came in.
The pattern for building those tree-like structures.
That's the one.
So how did they use that to represent a text document?
Well, think about a document as this hierarchy of elements.
Okay.
You've got characters, word, lines, paragraphs, sections,
yep.
and so on.
Okay.
Lexi used the composite pattern to represent each of these as a glyph object.
Glyph. Okay.
Yeah. It sounds kind of visual, like a symbol or something.
Yeah.
But how does that relate to the structure of a document?
Right.
Well, the cool thing is each glyph,
right.
whether it's a single character or an entire section,
mm-hmm.
has the same interface, which means you can treat them all the same way, regardless of how complex they are.
Okay.
You can add a character to a line.
Yeah.
A line to a paragraph to a section,
mm-hmm.
all using the same method.
So it's like building with Legos again.
Exactly. You got it.
You can connect the small pieces to make bigger ones, and they all fit together.
Yeah. And this consistent structure makes it so much easier to like navigate the document.
Okay.
Implement features like text selection and formatting,
hmm.
and even support undo/redo actions.
Right, because you could just like treat everything the same way.
Exactly.
Okay.
So composite is all about creating a consistent, manageable structure
right.
out of potentially really complex elements.
Okay.
But representing the structure is only one piece of the puzzle.
Right.
Lexi also had to deal with user operations.
Okay.
Typing, deleting, selecting text, applying formatting.
Mm-hmm.
And these operations often involve multiple objects.
Yeah. Like when you delete a character.
Yeah.
It affects the word that it's in the line, the whole paragraph.
Exactly. How do you manage that complexity?
Right.
Well, that's where the command pattern comes in.
Okay.
They encapsulated each user operation as a command object.
Like a little instruction packet.
Yeah.
For performing a specific action.
Precisely so. Instead of having all this code scattered all over the place for deleting characters, words, lines,
mm-hmm.
they had this delete command object
yeah.
that could handle all of those cases in a consistent way.
So this command object would know how to update all the different objects in the document.
It would handle removing the character from the word updating the line's content and so on.
Okay.
This made the code much cleaner and more organized, and it also made features like undoDo much simpler to implement.
Because you can just store the command object and execute it again to redo the action.
Exactly, or reverse it to undo.
Okay, I see.
You can think of it as a log of user actions,
right,
where each entry is a command object.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the command pattern is a really powerful way to manage complex interactions and keep your code organized.
Yeah, it sounds really useful.
It's essential for any application that involves user actions,
okay,
or these intricate workflows.
Now, Lexi's developers also use the iterator pattern to navigate the document structure.
Yeah.
Iterator, that's the pattern for looping through a collection of objects, right?
That's the one.
So why was that important in Lexi?
Well, remember that Lexi's document is represented as this tree structure of glyphs.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a way to move through this structure, visiting each glyph in a specific order.
Okay.
But without exposing all the underlying implementation details.
So they didn't want the code that's moving through the document to be, like, tightly coupled to the specific way the document is stored.
Exactly. Iterator provides a way to access the elements of a collection sequentially without needing to know how that collection is actually implemented.
So you could have like a forward iterator that goes through the document from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Or a reverse iterator that goes in the opposite direction.
Right. Yeah. Like you could even have an iterator that goes through the tree in a specific predefined order.
Okay.
And the code using the iterator wouldn't need to know how it all works under the hood.
That makes sense. So iterator is like this really powerful abstraction for working with collections.
It is. It makes the code more flexible and reusable.
Okay.
Now, Lexi's developers also had to support multiple window systems.
Right.
Things like Motif Presentation Manager and potentially others in the future. Hmm. And that's where the bridge pattern came in handy.
Bridge the pattern for separating an object's abstraction from its implementation.
That's it.
How did that help with handling all these different window systems?
Well, they created a window abstraction that represented the general concept of a window in Lexi, independent of any specific window system.
Okay.
Then they created separate implementations for each window system.
Okay.
So you had Motif Window, Presentation Manager Window, and so on.
So they had this generic window interface that all these specific window types had to follow.
Yeah.
But each window type could kind of implement that interface in a way that was tailored to its specific window system.
Precisely. The bridge pattern let them decouple those concepts of window management from the specific details of each window system.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which resulted in code that was way more modular and adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
They could easily add support for a new window system by creating a new implementation of that window abstraction.
Okay, so bridge sounds like a good strategy for handling those platform-specific variations without kind of messing up your whole design.
It's a powerful pattern for separating abstractions from implementations, making the code more flexible and easier to maintain.
Lexi is like this awesome example of how these patterns can solve real-world design challenges.
Yeah, it is.
It's like they had this whole toolkit of patterns.
Yeah.
And each one was perfectly suited for addressing a specific need.
And remember, this is just one example.
Right.
The beauty of design patterns is that they can be applied across all sorts of domains and problem spaces.
That's cool.
Yeah. They give us this common language for talking about design ideas.
Okay.
A set of proven solutions for recurring problems and a structured framework for thinking about software design.
Okay. So it's like this whole new way of thinking about software.
Yeah.
Not just the specific solution.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Now I think it's time to shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
And talk about pattern relationships.
Pattern relationships.
You mean like how different patterns connect and interact with each other?
Exactly. The Galath book emphasizes that design patterns aren't these isolated things.
Right.
They often work together.
Okay.
Either complementing each other or tackling different aspects of the same problem.
So it's like this network of interconnected patterns.
Precisely. And understanding these relationships can give you a deeper understanding of each individual pattern.
Okay.
And help you choose the right combination of patterns for a particular situation.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Can you give me like a specific example of how two patterns might be related?
Sure. Let's look at adapter and bridge.
Okay.
We've already talked about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
They both involve this level of indirection,
okay,
passing requests along to another object,
mm-hmm,
but they have different goals.
Right. You said that adapter is about like resolving incompatibilities between interfaces.
Yeah.
And bridge is about separating an object's abstraction from its implementation.
Right.
But how are they related?
Well, Think of Adapter as a translator. It takes an existing class that has an interface that doesn't quite fit and adapts it to an interface that the client expects. Bridge, on the other hand, is like a bridge builder. It creates the separation between an abstraction and its implementations so they can evolve independently.
So Adapter is about fixing existing issues,
Yeah.
and Bridge is about preventing future ones.
That's one way to put it. Now imagine you want to use a third-party library in your project, but its interface doesn't quite mesh with your existing code.
Sounds like you'd need an adapter.
You could, but what if you also want to be able to switch to a different third-party library later on?
That's where Bridge comes in. So
Exactly.
you'd use Bridge to define the functionality you need as an abstraction,
Yeah.
and then use Adapter to make that third-party library fit that abstraction.
You got it that way. If you switch libraries later, you only have to change the adapter, not the core code that's using the abstraction.
That's pretty cool.
It's a powerful combo.
So that's a great example of how understanding these pattern relationships can help you create designs that are way more flexible.
Yeah, and adaptable.
And that's just one example, right?
That's just one. The GOF book goes into a lot of other pattern relationships,
Okay.
offering valuable insights into how to combine and apply them effectively.
This deep dive has been a real revelation. I'm starting to see design patterns, not as like these isolated solutions, but as this system of interconnected ideas
Yeah.
that can kind of guide me toward better software design.
And that's precisely what we were aiming for with this deep dive.
Cool.
We want to spark your curiosity, give you the knowledge you need, and encourage you to explore the world of design patterns with this fresh perspective.
Okay, awesome. Wow. It feels like we've really uncovered this treasure trove of knowledge here.
Yeah.
You know, we've explored these patterns, we've like dissected them and seen them in action with examples like Lexi. It's just incredible to me how much thought goes into creating software that's not only functional, but also like elegant and adaptable.
That's the power of design patterns. They encapsulate all this collective wisdom from these really experienced developers, and they provide us with this toolbox for tackling those common design challenges. It's like having this mentor guiding you toward better
You
solutions.
know, it's not about just like slapping on a pattern and calling it a day.
Yeah,
It's
right.
more about understanding their strengths and weaknesses
Yeah.
and knowing when to use them and how they fit into the bigger picture of the software design.
Exactly. Design patterns should be viewed as tools to help you think through problems, weigh different solutions, and even communicate your design ideas clearly. They encourage a more structured and systematic approach to software design.
It's like having this special set of lenses that let you see the whole design space more clearly
I like that.
and spot those potential pitfalls early on
Yeah.
and choose the right approach for the job.
Now, as we wrap up our deep dive, I want to leave you with a challenge. Think about a software project that you're working on right now, or maybe a design problem that's been bugging you. Could any of the patterns that we've talked about help to improve your design?
Ooh, that's a good challenge.
Could they make your code cleaner, more flexible, or adaptable to future changes?
Yeah, it's like taking all these new tools that we've acquired and putting them to the test in our own workshops.
Exactly.
I'm already starting to see some possibilities.
And remember, the learning doesn't stop here. The GOF book and other resources are full of knowledge just waiting to be explored. There are more patterns to discover, nuances to uncover, and relationships to understand.
It's like we've opened the door to this whole new world of design possibilities.
So keep exploring, keep experimenting, and keep honing your design skills. Design patterns are a valuable companion on this journey, helping you create software that's not only functional, but also elegant, adaptable, and a joy to work with.
This deep dive has been truly inspiring.
Good to hear.
It's given me a whole new appreciation for the art and science of software design,
Yeah.
and I'm really excited to put these insights into practice.
Great.
Thanks for being such a fantastic guide through this fascinating world.
The pleasure was all mine. Happy designing, bird.